I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the U.S. war with Iran has been on for about 6 months, and there's no end in sight. And the longer it drags on, the more impact it will have on the American economy. Inflation is accelerating, interest rates are not coming down, gas and diesel prices are higher, and food items are getting more and more expensive. Surveys show that many Americans are having a tough time making choices about their household spending. Have you felt the sting of rising prices, and do you see the connection to the war? What do you want to see happen next? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
This is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The war with Iran is now being felt far beyond the battlefield. Americans are paying more for gasoline and diesel. Farmers are facing higher fertilizer and fuel costs. Businesses are dealing with more expensive transportation and shipping, and the conflict is adding another layer of inflationary pressure. So how much economic damage is the Iran war actually causing? Who is being hit the hardest? And if the conflict continues, could the United States face a difficult combination of higher inflation and slower economic growth? Joining us is Elizabeth Pancotti, Vice President of Policy Advocacy and Research at Groundwork Collaborative. She previously advised Senator Bernie Sanders on economic policy. Elizabeth, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Janelle Jones, a visiting senior fellow at the Century Foundation, a nationally recognized expert on labor markets and macroeconomic policy. Janelle, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Janelle, let me ask you first off, what do you see happening right now? How is it linked, this war with Iran and Americans' kitchen tables?
I mean, I think what we're seeing is what people are feeling, what they're screaming about at the top of their lungs. This war that this administration has started is making things so much worse for families that were already facing an affordability crisis. We've seen Americans have paid more than $80 billion more for gasoline. At this time last year, gas was about $3 a gallon. It's now about $4 a gallon. And we've seen the ripple effects kind of run through the economy. As you mentioned, we're paying more for diesel. It's increasing grocery prices. So it's really hitting families and households kind of across the board at a time when inflation is high, paychecks are lagging, and families are really struggling.
Right now, I just checked the price for oil, West Texas Intermediate crude, trading for about $83, $84 a barrel. Before the war started, it was about $60 or below. So that has gone up quite a bit, and I think that we're seeing that at the pump. Elizabeth Pancotti, do you think Americans are seeing that?
We know Americans are seeing it. We know that generally for every $10 per barrel that the price of crude oil goes up, that increases gas prices by about 20 cents. And as you've said, we've seen a $40 to $50 jump in crude prices over the last 8 months or so as the war has dragged on. And unfortunately, the vast majority of Americans are paying $4 or more for a gallon of gas, and they're making really tough decisions about road trips this summer, certainly about buying airfare. And as we head back to school, I think a lot of parents are struggling to figure out how they're going to cover the cost of carpool.
We definitely want to hear from our listeners to see how they're dealing with these rising prices, why they think these prices are rising. There are some in the Trump administration who say that Americans should be happy to pay more for gasoline and more for groceries in order to prevent Iran from achieving an atomic weapon. Give us a call if you feel that way or you think that this is unfair to you. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Particularly interested in how families are adjusting to these rising prices. There are some surveys that have been published that tell us that there is rising grocery anxiety. AP NORAC Center for Public Affairs Research, they put out a poll, I think it was came out today, that was of July. This is that 41% of Americans are extremely or very concerned about their ability to afford groceries in the coming months. That's a significant increase from the previous month, which was at 24%. We're seeing another poll that shows that Americans, 65%, are now buying generic or store brand or lesser brand of items when they go to this grocery shopping. 64%, they are shopping, they've stopped buying certain items, things like beef. They can't buy beef, so they're going to a different protein source. 62%, they say they've completely stopped going out to eat. They can't afford to go to restaurants anymore. 46% say they've changed where they shop. They're trying to find discount groceries in order to make things meet for them. So Janelle Jones, these seems like dramatic changes to American shopping behavior. What do you make of that?
I think that's right. I mean, I think people are not in charge of how much they spend at the grocery store. They don't set the prices for these things. And just to add a few more dismal numbers, some colleagues at the Century Foundation did some polling even before prices had really increased this year. This polling was done at the end of last year. And they found that 1 in 4 Americans were skipping meals to make ends meet, that 40% had tapped into their savings to cover everyday costs. 7 in 10 couldn't cover a $500 unexpected expense. And people were, relying more on debt than they had before as their savings were really depleted. And so I think people are really trying to stretch things as far as they can. But when you're faced with inflation that's increasing, when you have this level of unpredictability in economic policy, there's only so much you can do, right? There's only so much you can do to prepare for when prices may come down. As we've seen, particularly after the COVID recession, once prices are elevated, they don't come down nearly as fast. Even if we were able to end the war in Iran today, gas prices wouldn't immediately go down. And so I think people are in for, at least several more months of these elevated prices and inflation while trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, I've heard it described as the rocket and the feather effect.
That right.
The prices go up as like a rocket and they come down like a feather. And we did see that before. And so Janelle Jones, do you think Americans are, they're willing to make those sacrifices?
I mean, I don't think they were asked if they got a choice, right? I think making a sacrifice really implies that you were consulted, that you know why you're making the sacrifice, you know the end game, you have a timeline. And I think this administration has not provided any of that. We went into this war 5 months ago and said it would be, 4 to 6 weeks. That has never felt more false than right now. And so, I think people don't have a clear idea of what we're trying to do and the goals we're trying to accomplish. And in the meantime, we're asked to, suck it up and pay higher prices for something that we didn't really ask for, and we don't have a timeline for when it will end.
Well, the thing is, for many households, the most elastic part of the household budget is what they can pay at the grocery store. Rent is fixed, childcare, healthcare, these things are fixed cost. And so they're having to make these adjustments in what they eat, and frequently they're having to downgrade what they eat or eat less, and then make choices that aren't necessarily healthy. How much ramen do you expect a family to eat in order to get to the next payday? We're going to take a break here. I'm going to get Gloria and Kelly on the air. They've called in. If you want to join the conversation, we really, really want to hear what our listeners are doing, how they're making these adjustments. What have they stopped doing? Have you stopped going out to eat? Are you trying to be smarter about, burning gas? Are you making smarter trips? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Gloria, Kelly, Jennifer, hang on. We're going to get you on the air when we come back from this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The U.S.-Iran war is creating what's called a classic negative supply shock for the American economy. Energy and transportation costs are rising. Inflation is getting harder to control. Consumers have less money to spend. And the effect, though, is not uniform. U.S. oil producers and refineries and defense contractors, they're benefiting, but the broad impact for households and many businesses is negative. I do want to mention that Valero reported a 400% increase in profits recently. Let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255. And Gloria, hi, Gloria. Thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thank you for your show. Just a comment, yes, nothing is affordable. There's no eating out. There are no trips. The price of gas is just unbelievable. And but more disheartening and just so disappointing is this war is illegal. It was never passed by Congress. And Heather Cox Richardson said it best by saying she's seen worms with more spine than these Republican senators. And again, just one last comment is, not to forget that the war was started as a distraction from the Epstein files. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, Gloria, thank you for calling into The Source. Elizabeth Pancotti, Vice President of Policy Advocacy and Research at Groundwork Collaborative. Do you hear a lot of people expressing the same views as Gloria?
I think the American people are pretty unequivocal that they did not ask for this war. They, you know, really demanded the president that lower their grocery prices, make life more affordable, and do what he promised on the campaign trail, which was to lower prices on day one. And unfortunately, since the president was inaugurated in January, he has taken every opportunity to raise prices on the essentials for the American public, whether it's, you know, the price they pay at the pump, the price they pay at the grocery store, or worse, the amount that they pay for healthcare. And I think that Gloria is right that, you know, this is not a war that the American people asked for. There were lots of ways the president could have lowered the prices they pay for everyday essentials. And unfortunately, we really do see that there is a big misalignment between the sentiment of American voters and what the president is doing, which is really tanking his approval ratings. He is at record low ratings on his overall approval, and his approval on the economy is actually running below his overall approval, which is not what we saw in the first Trump administration. And so I think there is pretty uniform sentiment that Americans are not happy with the handling of the economy right now by the president.
Elizabeth, if after the midterm elections and the Republicans no longer control the House and or the Senate, would that make a change here?
You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of dysfunction in the halls of Congress in Washington, and the way that our, congressional system is set up is that those bills ultimately have to be signed by the president unless they can clear the threshold of a veto override, which, the margins would have to be overwhelming this November for that to occur, such that Congress could override the president's disapproval of legislation. But I do think that, you know, right now the polls have Democrats most likely flipping the House, and the Senate is really a toss-up. And I think regardless of who ultimately holds the power in either chamber, this election is really going to be a referendum on President Trump's administration, its policies, its agenda, and its handling of the economy. And I hope that on both sides of the aisle, policymakers really look at how they are making life more affordable and better for American families, which is not right now what policymakers in Washington are focused on.
Another caller, let's go to Kelly. And Kelly, thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I am an OBGYN physician in Central Texas, and you asked how we're seeing things that are happening because of the high cost of living. I see patients who cannot get their medications anymore, or pregnant mothers who are sacrificing their meals so that they can feed their children, women who are foregoing their appointments because they cannot afford gas. We, as a nation, had, albeit flawed, an agreement with Iran to prevent nuclear proliferation, which Mr. Trump pulled us out of. And now he's used that as an excuse to start a...
Okay, we lost the call. But Janelle Jones, can you react to what we heard from Kelly?
Yeah, it sounds like she's really facing families who are
you know, making tough choices when it comes to kids. And I don't think we've mentioned this before, but since the Republican budget passed, you know, 1.5 million children have lost food assistance benefits. This is causing additional stress for families as we think about going back to school, you know, right now in the summer when kids are home. And we know that this has long-term effects. We know that food insufficiency among school-aged kids is associated with lower test scores. We know that children with access to food stamp benefits are more likely to graduate. And at a time when households and parents are making, you know, really tough financial choices, and you can only stretch a paycheck so far, you really have to decide, you know, how much are we going to eat today? And I think when you're looking at kids and what this administration has done in terms of SNAP benefits is really, really disappointing. And it's just another way to, you know, point out kind of the cruelty of this administration and who their policies are helping and who they're not. And so, you know, at the same time, we're seeing kids not get lunch and families deciding, you know, to ration food for themselves so that their kids can eat. We're seeing runaway profits and inequality at the top, really at record high levels.
Now, the caller, let's go to Jennifer, 833-877-8255. We're interested in hearing how people are adapting, adjusting to these tougher prices at the grocery store and at the gas pump. And Jennifer, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, y'all. I know that India and Pakistan already have nuclear weapons, so I don't really care so much that Iran has a nuclear weapon. I'm of a retirement age, but I'm afraid to retire. The economy is so unpredictable. I live a very quiet life. I go to the grocery store, you know, I go to church. That's about it. So I notice people around me are living very small lives as well, which leads to our economy having stagflation, which is the very worst. We had that back in the 80s, and I don't want to see it again. It's hard to crawl your way out of that economic situation. So I wish people in Washington would wake up and grow a backbone.
All right, Jennifer, thank you for calling in. I appreciate hearing from you on that. So there are two good things I want to take away from Elizabeth's calls, from Jennifer's call, Elizabeth. Number one, how she's delaying retiring because of her economic anxiety, and then also her overall ideas about what's going on here. So, Elizabeth, what do you hear?
I think as we stare down the fiscal crisis with the Social Security Benefit Trust Fund hitting insolvency in just a couple of years, we are really seeing a lot more seniors worry about their retirement. I think we know that the savings rate has hit a four-year low and is sitting around levels that we saw in the Great Recession, which means that Americans really just do not have extras each month to put in their retirement accounts or to save away for an emergency expense or a rainy day. And I think a lot of seniors are facing the same situation that Jennifer is, where they're looking at the balance in their 401k accounts, looking at what those Social Security checks will be if they have access to either, and saying, I just can't make the numbers work to afford rent and groceries on a fixed income. I think also, you know, what she said about the financial situation of the 80s and the stagflation that we saw then in the 70s and 80s, she's completely right that it took a long time to get out of that. You know, mortgage rates in that time were in the double digits, and we are seeing so many American families crushed by rising housing costs right now. So many younger Americans are unable to buy their first house, and older Americans are really locked into the houses that they are in because they have a 2.5% mortgage rate and can't afford to downsize to move and lose that. I think overall, what we saw in last week's jobs report, where the economy shed about 20,000 jobs, unfortunately, we are and have been for several months seeing signs of stagflation in the economy. Growth is very slow and basically unanimously being driven by the AI data center build-out. Jobs are really only being added in sectors like healthcare, which unfortunately will face, you know, a lot of financial pressure over the next few years as Medicaid cuts. effect and rising prices. And the combination of those three things really is kind of an economic disaster, and one I think we have not seen the Trump administration try at all to get out of. If anything, they are really, you know, doubling down on these efforts to make things more expensive, make our economy contract, and hurt the labor market.
So, Janelle Jones, I've been hearing this phrase, the K-shaped economy, which means basically we have two economies simultaneously in the United States. One of them are the high stock market and the people who are doing really well. They're doing better and better. And then there's everyone else, and that's the bottom part of the K. They're doing worse and worse. So these are the people who seem to be hurt the most by $4 gasoline. These are lower income workers, rural Americans, suburban commuters, families with children. So, I mean, is that what we're looking at when we talk about a K-shaped economy?
Most definitely. That's definitely something that we've been seeing that this administration is really feeding into. There's some new research that came out earlier this year that shows for high income workers making, you know, above $125,000 a year, they've seen their wages climb about 6%. And for everyone else, inflation is outpacing wages. That means that in real terms, workers are facing an actual pay cut. Their paychecks are just not going as far. And so I think that we've seen this, as Liz was mentioning, you know, there's lots of talk about the stock market growing to new heights. You know, for people that I know in my family, their incomes don't change with the stock market. They are, you know, on an hourly wage, on a salary wage that is fixed, and they do not feel like the stock market is an accurate representation of the economy. It doesn't represent how most people are doing. It definitely doesn't represent how most people are feeling, because we're, you know, we're seeing, and we talked about some of the survey numbers, that people are just feeling really, really, really despondent about the economy. We're seeing that the macroeconomy, you know, there's very little churn. People are really clinging to the jobs they have if they do lose their job. You know, the numbers report that came out just a couple weeks ago showed that of the, you know, millions of people who are unemployed, one in four have been unemployed for more than 6 months. And so we're seeing people who are really trying to make it work. But, you know, to Liz's point, the numbers are just not adding up. The paycheck is not going as far. And then for low and middle income workers, you know, they're not getting a raise. Inflation is taking what they're able to get. Debt is also it's becoming an increasing part of households for lower income families. And at the same time, you see people at the top who are, you know, raking in the stock profits. Companies are increasing prices and kind of keeping that for themselves and then passing on higher prices to consumers.
And Elizabeth, did you want to talk on that?
You know, we saw this past week Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent say that the K-shaped economy is a myth, that it's not real. And I think for someone like him who made millions off the stock market and continues to run our Treasury Department so that it delivers for his wealthy friends and not for everyday Americans, it is just a really rich thing to say, as, you know, we see millions of families not be able to afford groceries, certainly not be able to buy a new pair of sneakers for their kids as they head back to school, and really struggle with unexpected expenses like paying their insurance deductible if their kid breaks their arm at the playground. And I think for the vast majority of Americans, they can see very clearly that the economy looks and feels very different from, you know, the president and from, you know, tech CEOs who are buying their 11th yacht or their fourth house. And I think it is very real that Americans see the stark inequality in our economy. And I'm not sure the Treasury Secretary declaring that was really the wisest move given the economic sentiment among everyday Americans right now.
Well, we've heard Donald Trump saying the affordability issue is a hoax. He says the affordability was a made-up word, made up by the Democrats, and that he has also said that he doesn't think anything about how the war is impacting household budgets across the United States. That's what he said. We're going to take a break here. April and Randall and Bill, hang on. We're going to go through this break, and we'll get you on the air. And we definitely want to hear from our listeners about how you're dealing with these rising prices. Are you having to buy less? Have you stopped going out to eat? What were you? Have you stopped buying some things altogether? You know, how is that working for you? And who do you think is responsible for that? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. April, I'm going to get you on the air as soon as we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The cost of living is getting higher in the United States, and more Americans are coping by turning to debt. In the last year, more than 40% of Americans have dipped into their savings, 37% have turned to credit cards. Many more report borrowing from friends and family in order just to make things meet up at the end of the month. How are you dealing with the rising cost of living caused by the war with Iran? Call in 833-877-8255, and let's go to Randall. And Randall, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yes, the war is a problem. All the prices are going up and all that. But it was either your guest or your caller who alluded to some of the things I was calling in about. The insane greed of our major corporations, the apathy of and the laughter of the top 1%, the top 2%. These things have always been with us. They were with us before the pandemic. They're after the pandemic, before Trump. They'll be with us a decade from now until we get a government that we need to bring to heel the disturbingly wealthy, the new robber barons, the broligarchy. Do you think the CEOs of the oil companies and our other major corporations are breaking a sweat from worry because the cost of their caviar went up? Do you think the tech bros are laying awake at night stressed out that they can't afford to fill the fuel tank of their 65-foot yacht? No, we need to crank the tax rates back up to where they were 100 years ago when our wealthiest were paying 65-70% of their income into taxes. And nobody went hungry on that.
All right, Randall, thank you for the call. Janelle Jones, you're with the Century Foundation. And according to a recent survey from the Century Foundation, it's found that Americans think that corporate interest and not government policy is the biggest obstacle for what is happening right now. They think that the influence of corporations and billionaires is what's really kind of making the situation worse, not so much the decisions that are being made by our elected officials. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a case where both things can really be true. To the caller's point, we have seen kind of cartoon villain-esque levels of greed in the last couple of years. And what we've seen from this administration is policy and regulation and rules that really feed into that and let that run rampant, right? We've seen, even at Donald Trump's second inauguration, we saw who was in the front row there. It was people who knew they were going to make a lot of money because of the way this administration thinks about corporations and wealthy people. And so I think that's, one thing that we really could address. And as people are, taking on debt to be able to pay for school lunches, they see the largest yachts we've ever seen. They see people buying entire islands and building bunkers, all while, everyday Americans are really struggling to make ends meet. And so that is definitely something that is really important. And I think, giving people a clear picture of what is wrong? What are the things we can do? Who are the villains of this story? Who's not paying their fair share? It's not that, people want their own island or their own yacht. They want to be able to afford their home. They want to be able to afford taking their kids on a road trip. They have, they've been promised, if you do the right things, you go to work, you do your part, that you'll have an economy that works for you. And what they're seeing is that's an economy that really only works for the rich and the wealthy.
Let's go to another caller. We have Bill. And Bill, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Thank you. A couple of quick thoughts. I kind of feel like all this economic problems we're having is kind of preordained and preplanned. I think if you look at the removal of so many immigrants from this country, you've taken out a cog or a gear that runs this economy. And that was done purposefully. And I think that was done to run this economy into the ground. These immigrant workers were not a problem, and yet they're gone. And now who's going to fill the gap, and how do you fill that gap? And the whole machine is slowing down and cranking down. The other thing I'm seeing, too, is doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat, they're on the same team, and that team doesn't care about us. The reason why is so many billions of dollars being spent on campaigns? Is it coming from us, the little people, or from the corporations? And why is that coming from them? That's to fulfill their special interests. And the only solution is with you, not with anyone else, with you, and what are you going to do about it? And that's my question and statement.
Well, Bill, thanks for calling in. Elizabeth Pancotti with the advocacy and research at Groundwork Collaborative. Bill brings up the immigration issue. So when we're talking about the war with Iran and this creating this this economic shock, but it's not happening in a vacuum. There are other things that are happening in our economy, other tariffs, that's another one, and then the immigration issue. Is that all compounding and it's ending up hurting the American consumer?
Exactly. That compounding effect is really what is making the effects of the Iran war, I think, just it is another layer on top of everything that consumers and small businesses and really the entire American economy has been put through the ringer over the past year and a half. As the caller was mentioning, over a million workers have been forced out of the labor force as a result of the president's immigration enforcement. By and large, I think while this administration has said that they are deporting criminals and people who don't work, most of the folks who have been targeted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement have unfortunately been workers in communities who are just trying to get to their job and provide for their family. That has had pretty significant effects on a number of sectors where immigrant labor is more represented than in others, such as construction and healthcare. And unfortunately, we know that those employers have really had a hard time filling those gaps with either other immigrant workers or with American citizens. I think part of the issue, too, is that this is all happening, as you said, not in a vacuum. The president imposed sweeping tariffs, and even after the Supreme Court ruled that those were illegal, has pursued other avenues to really try to cover all of the imports into the United States.
Right, so now with the new tariffs, they're claiming that these other countries are not doing enough to prevent slave labor. And so that's his excuse for the new tariffs. And it's kind of a pretty weak tea.
Yes, there are a number of authorities that the president has pursued to implement new tariffs. There have been obviously the emergency tariffs that he implemented last Liberation Day, April 1st of 2025. There have been a number of others, whether those have been kind of specific sectors like steel and aluminum, where we do see evidence that other countries have, oversubsidized those sectors and kind of flooded the market and manipulated the price of those. And in fact, President Trump in his first term applied those tariffs. President Biden kind of stuck with them, and then President Trump has increased them. And so I think there are some places where strategic tariffs make sense, either to protect American industries or to combat kind of unfair trade practices across the globe. That is not what the president is doing with the vast majority of the tariffs. He has targeted political enemies in Brazil. He has, threatened tariffs on Canada because of wildfire smoke that was coming over the border. These are not, coherent economic arguments. And certainly what we have seen is that these tariffs have actually increased cost for American businesses. It is quite expensive to build a new factory when the vast majority of those building materials are imported. And so even if you wanted to onshore manufacturing from overseas, it is actually now more expensive to do so given the interest rate environment and the tariffs on building materials. All of that has flown through to consumer prices. And, the vast majority of companies in their earnings calls over the last year and a half has said that they have passed on the tariff costs and then some. And if as
but then they're getting rebate checks.
Correct. Yes, they've as they've received those refund checks, they have all said that they're so happy because that is, you know, adding to their profit margin or covering the increased costs they're facing from the Iran war. So at the end of the day, the people who are getting refunded are not the American consumers who bore the cost of those high prices. It's the companies who are using it to protect their profit margins.
All right, I'm going to go to Reginald real quickly before we go to break. Reginald, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon. My name is Reginald, and I just had two comments. One is with the comment that your caller made about students not receiving food. I used to be a teacher, and I see kids throwing away so much food in the school system. They receive 3-4 meals a day, and they throw most of it away. My next comment is, or a question I would want to ask is, like, why are we focusing on what the rich are doing and not focusing on what our government is doing with the money? We receive over $7 trillion a year in taxes. What is our government doing with the money? It doesn't matter who, if you're a Republican or a Democrat, what are they doing with the money? California, for instance, receives some of the highest tax rates in the country, and they still have the same problems as Arkansas and any other poor country, any other in the union, and they receive so much in tax dollars. What are we doing? What is the government doing with the money? Outside of the federal government, whatever problems that they're doing, what are they doing with the money that we are already paying in taxes? And that's my comment. I just wanted to, I'll take my answer off of here.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break, and so we'll get your response when we come back from the break, and we'll get JD and Jose on the air. Also, if you want to call in, we really want to hear about how people are feeling about these rising prices. How are you adjusting? How are you making things meet up at the end of the month? Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back. On Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the economic impact of the U.S. war in Iran, how it's making consumers really struggle, having anxiety, making choices in the grocery aisle, how it's impacting their lives directly. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. Janelle Jones, if we could go back to Reginald's question when we went to break, he was saying that they collect so much in taxes. Where is that money going? We certainly know that we're spending a lot of money in the war in Iran. Is that something to be considered?
Yeah, I think that's a good complaint. You know, as regular people, we're paying our taxes all the time. I think, you know, I'd say two things. One, what we've seen, our policymakers on both sides of the aisle are not paying enough attention to the affordability crisis facing most Americans. And so I know we've spent a lot of time focusing on the rich in this administration, which I think, you know, deserves their fair share. But what we're seeing in survey data is people are just angry. They're angry at everyone. They're angry at everyone who's not taking seriously just how hard it is to make a paycheck last in this economy. And so I think there's enough anger to go around. You know, I think people are really struggling. And so I don't think it's going to be limited to just one group of people who kind of feel that wrath in the months to come, particularly as we get ready for the midterms. And then, you know, the focus on the rich is because so much of what we can do to make people's lives better is funded by taxes. And so when you have an entire class of people who evade or just straight up do not pay into their fair share, that's something that has to be addressed. You know, the rich and corporations, they benefit from a public and a society and public dollars, but then don't pay back into that. And so I think that's really a reason to pay attention. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, state governments do have a lot of leeway, but so much of what they can do is really, really determined by the rules of the game that is set by the federal government. The federal government gives tons of money to states to decide and sets the rules for, you know, Medicaid, SNAP, Affordable Care Act, things like this. And so you really do have to pay attention to what the federal government is doing, because there's only so much states can do if they are relying on federal government to either, you know, set the rules of the road or to provide the funding that then gets passed into everyday consumers.
But Elizabeth Pancotti, the Pentagon has a budget over $1 trillion now. And this war is costing billions and billions of dollars. And we keep hearing that the United States can't afford to have a universal health care system, but yet we can afford to have these endless wars. I mean, isn't that something that we should be thinking about?
I think those are very reasonable questions. And at Groundwork, we do a lot of focus groups and a lot of polling. And that those are the questions we hear voters ask for is, why can we always afford to cut taxes for the wealthy? Why can we always afford another foreign war? But we can't make sure that every child in the United States doesn't go hungry at night, or make sure that every person can access the health care that they need. And I think that, what we have seen is an intensification of those feelings over the past year and a half, especially since the passage of the Republican budget law, which cut about $1 trillion in funding from programs like Medicaid and food stamps to deliver, five times that in tax cuts for the wealthy, which only blows a further hole in our budget. And I think it is very reasonable for American voters to ask why we can't afford to cover the basics like health care and make sure that no one in America, in the richest country in the world, lives in poverty, while we can always afford, blank checks for the Pentagon and blank and endless tax cuts for the wealthy. I don't have a great answer other than those. I think those are very reasonable questions. And I think it really does it sows a lot of frustration with, everyday Americans who are paying their fair share, people who make $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, who their taxes come directly out of their paycheck. They might get a small refund in April. They feel like they are paying a fair share of their income, nurses, teachers, firemen, and yet Wall Street investors are paying very little, if any.
Let's go to JD on the phones. And JD, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Yes, I think our politicians are getting paid by corporations. They, that's why they go into office nowadays, not to save the country, but to earn all that money. They're getting kickbacks from politicians, corporations, to make them vote how they want them to vote.
All right, JD, appreciate that. So a lot of frustration there with JD. And he's kind of like giving up on the system there. Janelle Jones, is that a common sentiment these days?
It's definitely something we're seeing and we're hearing from people who are, really fed up. They've done what they've been told to do. They've got a job that they show up to every day. They're paying their taxes. They've done the best for their kids. They've tried to put them in college. And what they're getting back is, a paycheck that can't be stretched, the prices of absolutely everything skyrocketing, and then a level of political uncertainty where they also just don't know when prices are going to come down. And so I think that makes a lot of sense, and why, you're seeing people really, really loudly and forcefully say that this system is not working for me. The way the economy is working right now does not represent my interests. It doesn't make me feel secure. It doesn't make me feel stable. And so I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, let's go to Calvin on the phones, and Jose, we'll get you on next. But Calvin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just your average senior citizen living on a fixed income, and I want to talk about how they're cutting benefits. I used to give about $150 on SNAP, but now they cut it down to $23. I mean, what can you buy with that? And I have to get creative with the foods that I buy. Instead of a normal hamburger meat, I got to get ground turkey and the lower quality foods. And, to give you another example, bread. I like the better bread brands, but I can't afford it. And every time I go to the grocery store, I may have just maybe 10 items, but it's still over $50. That's killing me. And that's all I got to say.
Well, Calvin, thank you for that. This is great information. Thank you for sharing that. So, Elizabeth Pancotti, what do you hear from Calvin?
Unfortunately, because of the Republican budget law passed last summer, millions of Americans are seeing reductions in their SNAP or food stamp benefits, just like Calvin. We know that 4 million families have unfortunately lost those benefits altogether, including 1.5 million children. And for people like seniors, folks on fixed incomes, people with disabilities who are unable to work, those food stamp benefits really provide a lifeline. I think we've also seen that same sort of sentiment from grocers themselves. A couple of months ago on an earnings call with investors, the Walmart CEO talked about how customers are really pulling back on discretionary items in the grocery store. They are shopping only for what they absolutely have to buy, and that package of cookies or bag of chips that might not be so necessary, they are really starting to pull back on. As Janelle was saying, you know, you can't decide how much you pay for your rent or really how much you pay for your gas or electric bill that month, but you might be able to cut back at the grocery store. There does come a point where, you know, even that is really, you've hit the bottom of the barrel there. And I think we are starting to see a lot of families hit that point, especially with the loss of those food assistance benefits.
Yeah, and the food bank is feeling that too. I'm going to Jose. And Jose, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead, Jose.
Hi. I've been living a minimalist lifestyle since 2019 here in San Antonio. And reason being is that my wife suffered a catastrophic illness, and I've been caring for her for, I don't know, 5-7 years until she finally passed. And throughout that period, we had to really buckle down, and because of not just COVID, but rising medical costs and the cost of maintaining her medications, my medications, et cetera, et cetera. And now that I'm alone, because she passed recently, I still feel it. And this Iran debacle that both parties got us into is still looming, because we haven't even begun to feel the shockwaves. All right, we're just starting.
Yeah.
And I think if we continue down this path, it's going to be the end of me financially. I'm just going to be in ruins, and Lord knows where the hell I'm going to wind up. Okay. But and this is I blame both parties for this. They have a callous disregard for the American people, and the American people need to wise up.
All right, Jose, thank you for calling in, and I'm sorry about that. Janelle Jones, we've got about a minute and a half here. So we got a snapshot of real people dealing with real problems. Their lives are being made harder, more difficult. There's actual suffering going on because of policies being crafted in Washington, D.C. that really seems like they don't care about what's going on with American lives. Can you react to that?
Yeah, I think all of that is completely right. The political and policy decisions of this administration have made life more unaffordable for families at a time when they're already struggling with the prices of housing, childcare, healthcare, groceries. Everything is increasing, and we're seeing an administration that really is not prioritizing the needs of working people. And so I think that the response, you know, the callers that we've heard today are people who are really, you know, living this experience and think that there are things that we could be doing better. And I completely agree. I think the anger is completely called for. And so, you know, I think that as we think about, you know, the months ahead, you know, what are the things that people can do is really continue to make their voices heard, to hold policymakers accountable, because there's only so much you can do to control, you know, the prices in the economy. And it really is this administration that's making things hard for working people.
Right. So the voters have a say. Election's not that far away. Hold your candidates accountable, both parties, and tell them what you want and how you're feeling this economy. They own it. Elizabeth Pancotti, Vice President of Policy Advocacy Research and at Groundwork Collaborative. Also with us is Janelle Jones, the Visiting Senior Fellow at the Century Foundation. I want to thank you both for coming on the board today and helping us work through this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.